옴 나모 바게베테 바수레바야. 옴 나모 바게베테 바수레바야. 옴 나모 바게베테 바수레바야. 네, 그리스나. 네. So, very happy to be here for the beginning of a new semester here at Krishna House. How many of you are new this year who haven't been? We have one, two, three. Great. Well, welcome. I'm Tomohara Das, and I'll be here every couple of weeks, I guess. So we're all learning our new format. We'll be chanting some verses together, and then we'll go over chapter summaries and then continue on to today's verse. All right, so apparently you are doing reciting together 1825, 2111, and 2317. Is that right? Okay. So we'll just chant together the Sanskrit, and then we'll end the English. Okay.
Vipada santu takshashva tatra tatra jagad guru. Bhavato darshanam yachad apurna bhavadarshanam.
I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths.
Etan nirvijamananam ichchatam akutobayam yoginam nripanirnitam harirnam naukirtanam.
O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord, after the ways of the great authorities, is the doubtless and fearless ways of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge.
Ayur harati vaipungsam udyanashtam chayanasau. Tashyarte yat Krishna nita uttama shloka vartaya.
Both by rising and by setting, the sun decreases the duration of life of everyone, except one who utilizes the time for discussing the topics of the all good personality of God. Jai. Oh, very nice verses. Were these from any particular? From the Bhakti Vaibhava course. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, very nice. Yeah, I wish I knew all these. By arts, you know. All right, so we'll read a real brief chapter description of Canto 2, the first six chapters, because we'll be discussing the verse in the sixth chapter today. So chapter 1 says, regarding the duty of a man about to die, Shukadeva Goswami says that such a person always chants and hears about Lord Krishna. I'm sorry, page 9 in your Srimad Bhagavatam at a glance. You have to tell me where to get these. This isn't good. I'm sorry, I'll start it again. Regarding the duty of a man about to die, Shukadeva Goswami says that such a person always chants and hears about Lord Krishna. He then describes the method of meditating on the Lord's universal form. Chapter 2. Shukadeva describes Ashtanga Yoga, whereby a yogi meditates on the Supersoul within his heart. Chapter 3, Shukadeva then describes the path of worshipping demigods and then recommends that everyone worship Lord Krishna, whether he be full of desires or desireless. Chapter 4, Parikshit asks about the creation, and Shukadeva prays to the Supreme Lord for the empowerment to speak about the Lord's pastimes of creation. Chapter 5, Shukadeva relates a story where Narada Muni asked Brahma the same questions. Brahma explained that he creates the universe after the Lord creates all its ingredients and impregnates material nature with the seeds of the living entities. Chapter 6, the Purusha Shukta prayer glorifies the Supreme Lord for being simultaneously one with and different from his creation. Everything rests on him, yet he is aloof. By meditating in the Lord's universal form and by offering sacrifice with ingredients from the Lord's universal body, Brahma recreates the universe at the beginning of each of his days. Okay. So today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 6, verse 42. Let's see. Do I have a book? Let's read. That's the last of the first part. Okay.
Adyo Vatara Purusha Parasya Kala Svabhava Sadasan Manascha Dravyam Vikaro Guna Indriyani Varats Varats Tashnu Charishnu Bhumna Adyo Vatara Purusha Purasya Kala Subhava Sadasan Manascha Dravyang Vikaro Guna Indriyani Viratsvarats Tashnu Charishnu Bhumna Adyo Vatara Purusha Parasya Kala Svabhava Sadasan Manascha Dravyam Vikaro Guna Indriyani Viratsvarats Tashnu Charishnu Bhumna Adyo Vatara Purusha Parasya Kala Svabhava Sadasan Kavyam Vikaro Tuma Indriyani Saratsaras Tashnu Charishnu Bhumna Vatara Purusha Parasya
Kala Svabhava Sadasan Manascha Dravyam Vikaro Guna Indriyani
Virat Sarat Sashnu Charishnu Bhumna. Okay. Adya. First. Avatara, incarnation, Purusha, Karnavashai Vishnu, Parasya, of the Lord, Kala, time, Svabhava, space, Sat, result, Asat, cause, Mana, mind, Cha, also, Dravyam, elements, Vikara, material ego, Guna, modes of nature, Indriyani, senses, Virat, the complete whole body, Svarat, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Stasnu, immovable, Charishnu, movable, Bhumna, of the Supreme Lord. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Karnavashi Vishnu is the first incarnation of the Supreme Lord, and he is the master of eternal time, space, cause, and effects, mind, the elements, the material ego, the modes of nature, the senses, the universal form of the Lord, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and the sum total of all living entities, both moving and non-moving. Report. That the material creation is not permanent has been discussed many times here and before. The material creation is but a temporary exhibition of the material energy of the Almighty God. This material manifestation is necessary to give a chance to the conditioned souls who are unwilling to associate with the Lord in the relationship of loving transcendental service. Such unwilling conditioned souls are not allowed to enter into the liberated life of spiritual existence because at heart they are not willing to serve. Instead, they want to enjoy themselves as imitation gods. The living entities are constitutionally eternal servitors of the Lord, but some of them, because of misusing their independence, do not wish to serve. Therefore, they are allowed to enjoy the material nature, which is called maya, or illusion. It is called illusion because the living entities under the clutches of maya are not factually enjoyers, although they think that they are, being illusioned by maya. Such illusion living entities are given a chance at intervals to rectify their perverted mentality of becoming false masters of this material nature. And they are imparted lessons from the Vedas about their eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord Krishna, Vedaishta Sarvarahang Eva Vedyo, which is Bhagavad Gita, what? 1515. So the temporary creation of the material manifestation, just keep everyone awake. So the temporary creation of the material manifestation is an exhibition of the material energy of the Lord. And to manage the whole show, the Supreme Lord incarnates himself as the Karnavashayu Vishnu, just as a magistrate is deputed by the government to manage affairs temporarily. This Karnadakshaya Vishnu causes the manifestation of material creation by looking over his material energy, sa Akshata. Yeah, you notice here that both Karnavashayi and Karnadakshayi seem to be used interchangeably for Mahavishnu, both of these terms. It's the same Purusha expansion. In the first volume of this book, we have already discussed to some extent the explanation of the verse Jagrai Purusham Rupam. The duration of the illusory play of material creation is called a kalpa. And we've already discussed the creations taking place in kalpa after kalpa. By his incarnation and potential activities, the complete ingredients of creation, namely time, space, the modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and the senses and their reservoir source, the gigantic universal form as the second incarnation, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and all living beings, both moving and standing, which come out of the second incarnation, all became manifested. Ultimately, all these creative elements and the creation itself are but the potential manifestations of the Supreme Lord. Nothing is independent of the control of the Supreme Being. This first incarnation of material creation, namely Karnavashayi Vishnu, is the plenary part of the original personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, described in the Brahma Samhita 5.48 as follows. Yashaika nivashita kalam atavalambya Jivanti loma vilaja jagadanandanata Vishnur mahansaiha yasya kala vishesho Govindam adipursham tamaham bhajami. All the innumerable universes are manifested only during the breathing period of Mahavishnu or Karnavashayi Vishnu, who is only a plenary part of Govinda, the original personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Om Jnanati Mananda Shagyananjana Salakaya Chakshul Mitam Yena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Trivishcha Kripa Sindhavya Vichha Patitano Pavnebhyo Vaishvayu Namo Namaha. That was a very, very nice verse in purport. And in this purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about, he explains the process of creation and also the purpose of creation. It's sort of all included right here within this purport. I thought I'd talk a little bit about, first of all, the way that Krishna expands himself into this material world and how the creation comes about, since that's a main theme of this chapter and also in some of the previous chapters. I know several of you were last year here where we went through Canto 2, and as you'll remember, some of this sounds familiar. There's two or three different places where the creation is discussed and where... in some previous chapter, I think one of the last classes I was here, I remember there was an extensive discussion about how Krishna manifests
all the material energies, you know, how the senses, the sense objects, you know, the demigods, how all of those come into creation. So we've already covered quite a bit in the second canto about the different processes of creation. Now here, because of the questions of Maharaj Parikshit, Shukadeva Goswami has begun to relate a conversation between Lord Brahma and Narada Muni, where Narada Muni asks similar questions of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is, of course, the father of Narada Muni, and Brahma is the, he's basically the, we should say, the secondary creator of this material universe. We'll talk more about that in a moment. But now Brahma is explaining again to Narada sort of this whole process of creation. Now, towards the end of this chapter, he's already discussed sort of how the universal form and how, you know, due to Krishna's arms, you know, things are manifested and everything is manifest as material world based upon expansions of the energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, in a few verses earlier, Narada asked Brahma to explain to him about the different incarnations. So what we're getting right here at the end of this chapter is the beginning of the discussion of the different energies, expansions, incarnations of Krishna, and then it will go into chapter 7 where a lot of the specific Leela avatars are named. So actually, in this particular verse, Karnadakshaya Vishnu or Karnavashaya Vishnu is being named as one of the first incarnations. So again, what's happening is Lord Brahma is explaining to Narada the different ways that Krishna expands himself and his different energies, and not just his different energies, but his different incarnations. And the first one he describes is Mahavishnu, who is one of, you know, obviously one of the first expansions of Krishna. So first he's explaining Mahavishnu and his position, and Prabhupada elaborates on that in this purport. So I thought I would kind of start from the beginning and sort of move forward and how things are set up, just as kind of an overview. This seemed to be an appropriate chapter to kind of talk about Creation Basics 101. Okay? So first of all, Krishna has three energies. A lot of this is, you know, familiar, well-known to many of you. He has spiritual energies, material energy, and the living entity, which is considered to be the marginal energy, or Tatashta Shakti. So within the spiritual energy, sometimes it's described as there are three different forms of that spiritual energy, the Sandini, the Samvit, and the Hladini. A lot of this is described earlier in the sixth chapter. And the Sandini, Samvit, and Hladini means eternity, his eternity or existence, energy or aspect. And Samvit means knowledge, Hladini means his pleasure potency or bliss. So these are the different energies of the Lord. Now it's described in an earlier purport that when Krishna wants to expand or create material energy, it is through a Sandini potency. Now the Sandini potency is a spiritual potency, and it's described that 3/4 of that energy is in the spiritual world. And only 1/4 of Krishna's Sandini potency is used in this material world. It's called the Tripad Vibhuti and Ekapad Vibhuti. Also, it's also described by Srila Prabhupada that 3/4 of all living entities are in the spiritual world. They never leave Krishna. They never leave the spiritual world. Only 1/4 of the living entities actually ever come into this material world. That's us. We're like the bad children, I guess, you know, who are here. So, at any rate, he uses this 1/4 of his Sandini potency to create this material world. First of all, his first expansion, or his first Purusha incarnation, is this Karnavashayi Vishnu, or sometimes called Mahavishnu. And it's described that he lays down in the causal ocean, which is in the spiritual world. The causal ocean is in the spiritual world, but over in one corner, Prabhupada describes, in one little corner over here of this causal ocean, there is the Mahatattva. And Mahatattva is also described as a dark cloud of this material energy. So, of course, this is all Krishna's energy. This is one of his energies, the material energy.
So Karnadakshay Vishnu causes the creation of the universes to take place, and he actually is, and he also causes the creation of sort of the unmanifested material energy. Sometimes it's called pradhana or mahatattva, slightly different definitions, but it gets pretty technical. It's hard for me to follow it all sometimes. But the pradhana is the most unmanifest, and mahatattva has some manifestation. But at any rate, when Mahavishnu lays down on the causal ocean, it's described that his breathing, he breathes out and all the universes are manifested. When he breathes in, all the universes come back within him. So this is the duration of his breath is called a Mahakalpa. It's like one full entire creation of this, of all of the material universes. And then within each one of these universes, there's a second Purusha incarnation expanded as Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Garbhadakshay Vishnu lays down within the universe is half filled with water. Garbhadakshay Vishnu lays down in that water. A lotus flower comes from his navel. Out of that lotus flower is born Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma has described all this previously about his own birth. And of course, there's nothing there. There's nothing. It's basically he's looking around this in darkness. So Lord Brahma hears a sound, the sound tapa, these two syllables, which means austerity, penance. So he sits down to meditate. And after many, many years of meditation, then Vishnu reveals himself to Brahma. He speaks to him. He actually speaks to him the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the four Chatur Shlokas. And then he instructs him on the process of creation. Because Lord Brahma's job, his service, is to create the material world. Now when we say create, what he really is doing, he's more or less, he's a builder, an assembler. He takes all the material ingredients given by Garbhadakshay Vishnu at this point, and he takes all the material elements and he puts them together to help create the bodies, the forms, everything that we see in this material world is all the secondary creation of Lord Brahma. Now, he doesn't create the living entities, of course. We are all eternal. And the living entities are, of course, injected into this material world. This has all been done by Krishna, by the Vishnu Purusha incarnations, and everything comes into being. So this has all been described, and this has been kind of the theme of the last couple chapters, and Prabhupada quotes this one verse, Jagrai Purusham Rupam. So the meaning of that was, that's from 1.3.1, Bhagavatam. In the beginning of the creation, the Lord first expanded himself in the universal form of the Purusha incarnation and manifested all the ingredients for the material creation. And thus, at first, there was a creation of the 16 principles of material action. This was for the purpose of creating the material universe. Okay. So, then, as we know, within the universe, there's a third Purusha expansion, Shridakshay Vishnu. He's laying on the milk ocean, and he's in the island of Swetadweep, which is within the universe. And Shridakshay Vishnu also expands as the Paramatma, the Supersoul. So the Supersoul, the Paramatma within the heart of every living entity, and actually within every atom, and Prabhupada said even between every atom, is the third Purusha expansion, Shridakshay Vishnu. So this is kind of how it's all going on in terms of the expansions. So I was going to talk a little bit about time periods and kalpas and things like that, which are mentioned throughout the Bhagavatam, but I'll stop here if there are any questions or comments. Yeah. In the milk ocean in Swetadweep, there's an island called Swetadweep, and that's the home of Shridakshay Vishnu. It's actually within this material universe. Yeah, it's in the material universe. Right. Yeah, all of the Purusha, these Vishnu expansions, are within the material universe. You know, and of course, Vishnu and Narayan also exist eternally in the spiritual world as well. Yeah.
I thought
the causal ocean, no, it's not outside the spiritual world exactly.
It's kind of like on the border.
Right.
And there's actually what's called the Virata. Isn't the Virata River? That's actually the borderline between the material and the spiritual. But the causal ocean, you know, it's kind of a borderline area. I mean, it's in other words, it says it's like one corner of the causal ocean is the Mahatattva. So material energy is sort of like kind of within it, but not exactly within it. A little hard to, sort of hard to follow geographically where all these things are because, you know, it's so beyond our our material sense of time and place. Thanks.
Hare Krishna. So just to clarify, so Karanodakshay Vishnu comes first, and then comes Garbhodakshay Vishnu,
yes,
and then comes Kshirodakshay Vishnu.
Right.
Okay. Because I never figure out the order.
Yeah, that's the order of the three, what they're called, the Purusha incarnations.
Right.
It's the three Vishnus, Karanodakshay, Garbhodakshay, and Kshirodakshay.
Right. And then, did you say the material energy comes from Sandini Shakti?
Yes, that's how it's described. That one quarter of the Sandini energy is utilized for the creation of the material energy. The general principle is that everything comes from the spiritual. The spiritual energy is the original source of everything. Just like Krishna is the source of the material world, but Krishna never really touches matter himself. You know, so it has to come from somewhere. So that's where it comes from a portion. Of that Sandini or spiritual, that particular spiritual energy. Yeah, it's described by Prabhupada in one of the purports in this chapter. I'd have to find it. Look through it. All right. Yes? What's that? Oh, okay.
Lord Brahma met Kshirodakshay Vishnu when the demigods and they went to pray. Before Lord Krishna came.
Yes, he did.
So he is able to see Kshirodakshay Vishnu, but he's also able to see Garbhodakshay Vishnu.
Yeah, originally he sees Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Now, I have not seen, and someone could correct me if you have other information, but I haven't seen that Garbhodakshay Vishnu plays much of a part, you know, after that original, you know, Brahma being born from the lotus flower from his navel, and then him sort of bringing about the creation. Usually when we hear about the demigods or Brahma going to see Vishnu, it's Kshirodakshay Vishnu, who sort of seems to be the sort of more permanent representative of Krishna within this material world. That's my understanding.
And where does the Garbhodakshay... Yeah, he lies in the Garbhodak ocean?
The universe fills up half of the water, and that's where Garbhodakshay Vishnu is. But I don't know. I can't remember that there's a lot of other pastimes that have always with Garbhodakshay Vishnu after Lord Brahma. It seems like they're usually going to see Kshirodakshay Vishnu in Swetadweep. Yes, bro.
Sometimes thinking about Garbhodakshay Vishnu and even Karanodakshay Vishnu, I have a tendency to think like, okay, Garbhodakshay Vishnu must be at least three times as big as the earth and lying underneath us. But is there a sense of like the better scale for that, so we can know?
I've never really heard that. You know, the thing is because everything is so state of flux, kind of. Everything can expand or contract. You know, Krishna's energy. You know, sometimes you know he can assume gigantic forms or tiny forms, or you know he's probably the size that's needed for the particular occasion. You know, and he can change that at will. Yeah, well, the same.
You
I'll use the microphone. But.
I think it's described that these universes, as they're coming out of the body of Mahavishnu, they get larger and larger as they leave his body.
Yes, I think, they expand. They come out of his, actually, the pores of his skin.
Yeah.
And they come out as like little bubbles, as described, and then those bubbles will expand and grow. And they're all different sizes. Our universe is actually fairly small.
I think we're in one of the newest universes.
Yeah, we're a very small little universe, not very important. What? Only a four-head Brahma. Yeah, some universes require a thousand-headed Brahma to be intelligent enough to to manage everything. You know, so we don't want to become overly puffed up.
If all the universes are coming out of his pores and everything's created, then why when Brahma comes out, is it everything's blank. You know.
Well, everything is not created at that point. It's all unmanifest. It's just sort of raw energy. It's like you've got earth, water, fire. It's kind of like, you know, if you were going to build a building, and it's kind of like you had a pile of bricks and a pile of lumber, you know what I mean?
So the universes are kind of incomplete?
Well, yeah, they're unmanifest. That's a better way of putting it. I don't know if you would say incomplete, but in a sense, they're not really constructed yet. So Lord Brahma has to take all those ingredients, and he actually uses earth, water, fire, earth, all the senses, everything, and he creates our bodies, he creates everything, you know, the mountains, the rivers, the forests, you know, everything that's there, he puts together. And that's why they repeat this several times, this principle that everything is coming from Krishna. It's not Lord Brahma who's actually the creator. Because he even says, at one point, he says to Narada, some people mistake, think that I am the creator of the universe. He says, I'm just an instrument. You know, like I'm the builder. It's kind of like, you know, if you want to build a house and you hire a contractor, you know, and you brought all the ingredients and you brought all the lumber and everything, well, you could say that the contractor is the creator of the house, but actually you were the energy behind it, right? You hired him, you bought all the materials, everything like that, and then you had a carpenter build the house. I think that's kind of the way to understand it. Maybe one more, and then we'll go on to some other concepts here.
Okay. I don't know if this is too detailed, but I was wondering about how the Sandini potency, it sort of creates material time and creates a material world in that way. Are there other parallels with the Sambhi potency and the Hidini potency?
Other parallels.
Like
of course,
with,
they're also
with
called
material energies.
That's a good question. I haven't heard that. Like, I don't think the three modes of nature, anything. I don't think there's any other particular equivalence to say the Sandini, Samvit, and Hladini within this material world. They're also sometimes called Sat Chit Ananda too. It's really the same concept,
yeah.
Sat Chit and Ananda potency. And they're really spiritual energies. Mm-hmm. So it's really just a fraction of one of those spiritual energies that's used, you know, to create material energy. Of course, when we say create, you know, it's all very tricky because it's all existing eternally. Mm-hmm. So creation is kind of a relative term that we're using. You know, it's like, the living entities never actually, you know, we emanate from Krishna, but it's not that we're created at a time in history. You know, we're eternal.
Yeah.
That's, you know, Krishna's first teaching to Arjuna. He says, never was a time when you did not exist, nor I, nor all these kings. So in other words, all Krishna's energies are eternal. Mm-hmm. But the material energy specifically is described as manifest and unmanifest. Mm-hmm. In other words, it changes in its appearance, when it's being fully manifested, when it's withdrawn back into Krishna. So material energy has this temporary nature. Mm-hmm. And Prabhupada talks about that in purport. That's one of the first things he says here. To understand how material energy is temporary, not that it doesn't always exist, but the way that it manifests, the way the forms, you know, the particular manifestation is temporary. It comes and goes. Although the energy itself is an eternal energy. As far as exactly how Sandini transforms material energy, I have no idea.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
Thanks.
If somebody, you know, I've never read that. If somebody knows more. Otherwise, I think we'll go on.
Can I just mention there was one pastime in the 10th canto where Arjuna and Krishna go to see Mahavishnu.
Yeah, that's right.
Just other than that, I don't know of a Garbhodakshaya.
That's true. They see Mahavishnu. So they actually go outside of the universe, apparently to the causal ocean. Yeah, that's a good point. But not Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. We don't hear of him again. And rarely Mahavishnu, except in like a case like that. Okay, also, and I want to talk a little bit about time, because this word kalpa is mentioned here, and Prabhupada talks about a little bit about the time element. So here's kind of what's going on in terms of time. Lord, each universe exists for the duration of the exhaling or outward breath of Mahavishnu. When Mahavishnu inhales, all the universes come back into his body, which means there's complete annihilation of the universe. Okay, that's called a Mahakalpa. That's the lifetime of Lord Brahma. Each Lord Brahma in each universe, that entire lifetime of Lord Brahma, which is 100 years in his sense, but of course is much longer in our sense, that's a Mahakalpa. That is a complete creation and a complete annihilation.
Now, with that time period happens to be about 311 trillion years. Okay? So it's a very, very long time. Now, within that, there are further divisions. Often we talk about a day of Lord Brahma's lifetime, because not only does, well, it's described that there's three creation, or there's three types of kalpas. There's the Mahakalpa, which is entire creation. Then there's what the Mahavishnu is breathing out. Then there's what's called a Vikalpa, which is actually Brahma's creation during his lifetime. His creative episode or pastime is called a Vikalpa. But what we hear about more is a Kalpa. A Kalpa is a day of Brahma. So there is a partial creation and partial annihilation with each day of Lord Brahma. Okay? And we're talking now about 4,320 million years, right? A day of Brahma is 4,320 million years. Okay? So within each day of Brahma, there's a partial annihilation. Most of the planetary systems are destroyed after the end of each day of Brahma. There are some of the great sages and saints, as described, very highly realized personalities. They actually, you know, get out of wherever they are, and they are able to travel to the topmost planetary system, Brahmaloka, planetary systems, which apparently are not destroyed. Because obviously Lord Brahma lives for 100 years. He's not destroyed at the end of his day. So that's why I say it's a partial annihilation. Obviously the earth planetary systems, all that, even the heavenly planetary systems, gone. Okay. But there is a topmost planetary system, Tapaloka, Janarloka, Satchaloka, systems which are not destroyed. And that's where all the saintly personalities go. And so they live on. So anyway, in each day of Brahma, there's this partial creation again. So, you know, Lord Brahma doesn't have to just do this once and sit back, you know, for 311 trillion years and, you know, and just sort of enjoy life. Yes, every day he's got to recreate. You know, he has a lot of service to do, you know. He has to recreate the whole planetary system every day of his life. Then at night, you know, there's the destruction. Then he wakes up in the morning, apparently, and has to, you know, and creates again. But he likes doing this. This is his nature. This is his service, you know. You know, so it's okay for him. So within each day of Brahma, there are what we call Divya Yuga cycles. So we know that the earth goes through different yugas or different cycles of time periods. Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Kali Yuga. This is a period of about 4,320,000 years. That's why in 1,000 days, that's why a day is 4,320,000,000 years, 1,000 times that. So there's 1,000 of these yuga cycles within every day of Brahma. Okay. Now, there's also the Universal Planetary Administrative System has what's called Manus, or the Fathers of Mankind. Manu is a name that's very similar to the word man comes from. So there are 14 Manus in every day of Brahma. Okay, these are like the administrators and progenitors, and they kind of get, you know, you hear a lot of stories, a lot of history, especially in the 8th and 9th canto, about descendants of the Manus and how, you know, they had this one, you know, it's kind of like a lot of beginning, begotting, and having a lot of children, a lot of dynasties and things like this. So there's a lot of stories of that. Now, we are, oh, by the way, within Lord Brahma's lifetime, he's 50 years old. You know, he's just hitting middle age. You know, where we are right now, currently, is 50 years through this particular Mahakalpa. We're halfway through. Now, within this particular day of Brahma, we're in the seventh Manu, which is Vaivashvata Manu. You hear a lot about Swayambhuva Manu, is the first Manu. He's mentioned a lot in the Bhagavatam. In fact, he's one of the Mahajans, one of the great spiritual authorities. First one is Swayambhuva Manu. We're in the sixth one was Chakshusha Manu, and now we're in Vaivashvatu Manu. In fact, there's even where is it? It's in the eighth canto, the story of Satyavrata and the Matsya incarnation. So this was at the very end of the Manvantara, at the end of the Chakshusha Manu. There was a great flood. And it's described, there's apparently some disagreement, but most of our acharyas say that there's actually a partial, there's some kind of annihilation at the end of each Manu as well.
So in that case, we had this flood, and that's when Matsya had to save the Earth planet, and previously Matsya had to save the Vedas. So he incarnated there, and then, of course, he saved Satyavrata. In Satyavrata, then that was the end of the Chakshusha of Manu. He became Vaivishvatu Manu after that, his next birth. Then he took birth as Vaivishvatu Manu, who is the son of Vivishvan, right? That's why his name is son of Vivishvan, I believe, and the sun god. And so so he is now the presiding Manu, Vaivishvatu Manu. So we're about halfway through the day. We're like halfway through the lifetime of Brahma and approximately halfway through the day of Brahma in the seventh Manu. Now, within, as we said, you know, there's all these different yuga cycles. Within this particular Manu, we're in the 28th Divya Yuga. So 28 yuga cycles have already gone by. Now, an interesting thing occurs, and I do not know the technicalities of this, but Prabhupada just says there's an overlap of yugas. If you actually calculate and you divide 70, you divide 14, 1,000 by 14, it doesn't come out exactly even. It's like 71 point something. So because it doesn't come out quite right, there's some overlapping, or there's sometimes the yugas get changed around a little bit. In this particular Divya Yuga, which means the four, you know, there is an overlapping, and therefore the yugas are reversed. So, you know, we say it goes Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapar Yuga, but Treta means three, doesn't it? But Treta is not the third yuga. Treta is actually this, in this, right now, Treta is the second yuga. So there's a reversal there. The third one comes before the second one. And so the third one is Dwapar Yuga. And what happens in the 28th Divya Yuga when you have this overlapping, when you have this interesting, cosmic change? Something happens only in this one day, in this one time. Krishna appears. And Lord Chaitanya also appears. I think Lord Chaitanya only appears once in a day of Brahma, in the form of Lord Chaitanya. You know, there's always a Kali Yuga, there's always an avatar, you know, but he only rarely comes as Lord Chaitanya. And Krishna only appears on this earth planet this once, you know, during this whole Manu, cycle of Manus. So, you know, when you think about it, we're extremely fortunate. We're kind of born in the right time, in the right place. When Lord Krishna appeared and Lord Chaitanya appeared, this doesn't happen all the time. This is sort of a rare occurrence. And we're only like 500 years from Lord Chaitanya's appearance. I mean, we have writings of people who are, you know, directly his direct, you know, disciples and, you know, the Goswamis. And this is, when you talk about 311 trillion years and kalpas and mahakalpas, I mean, 500 years is like current history. That's like current news, you know. So this is actually a very fortunate time to be in, that we have this recent appearance of Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. Okay, I think that's probably enough on the time period. Any questions on that? Oh, lots of questions. Okay, we'll start back there. I'm still trying to get to the purpose of human life here, but we'll go. we'll do that real quickly. You already know that. Okay, go ahead.
Is the life of like one Indra same as the period of one Manvantara?
Is what the period?
One Indra. Indra reigns one Manvantara.
One of Indra.
Yeah, the life. Of
yes, Indra. Actually, that's a very good point. Usually, there's a new set of demigods with each Manu. So Indra's lifespan would go during the period of the Manus. Yeah, thank you. That's good. I'd forgotten that. Yeah, you'll have all of these demigods, because they really just hold posts. Indra is a post, right? I mean, in other words, different personalities. In fact, in the Swayambhuva Manu, it says there was no suitable person, so Krishna himself took the part of Indra. Of course, when we see all the later pastimes of Indra, we realize it's not Krishna. Anyway, go ahead.
What was it? You said there is some calculation problem with where there is overlap. What is that calculation problem? Some divide by, if you divide by some number, you won't get exact integer.
The calculation problem? Well, it's just that there's a few extra yugas to work in somehow, and so there's this overlapping of yugas. So sometimes the yugas are reversed, just, you know, because of the time period. I don't know the details of that, in much more than I already said. Because at any rate, like I said, it's like in fact, Prabhupada, one place said there's 71 yuga cycles in a manvantara and some places 72. It's actually somewhere in between there, 71, 72, so it doesn't work out exactly.
Like Prabhu was explaining that life Brahma is until when Mahavishnu is exhaled.
Yeah.
And all the universes are created. And then when he inhales, all universes are destroyed.
Right.
So, and each universe has an individual Brahma.
Yes.
So all the Brahma have the same age?
Have the same age?
Because they are like
yes.
created.
Yes. They all have 100 years. Yeah.
Which is like 311 trillion years, human
Three,
years.
Which is 311 trillion years, yeah. Yeah, you know, which is interesting because as Prabhupada points out that to the demigods and to the and on even on the higher planetary systems, what is it? It's like a year is 1,000 years. You know, in other words, the time span is very, very large, but to them, they experience it more or less like we do. In other words, the demigods experience their very, very long lives of millions of years, kind of like we do. It still seems like to everyone, it's a 100-year lifespan. It's just that in Earth years, it's much longer.
I was wondering why in Bhagavatam there would be descriptions of Manus and their dynasties, and how is it related to Krishna? That we hear that Srimad Bhagavatam is an incarnation of Krishna.
Yes. Yes, everything in the Bhagavatam is related to Krishna. And in fact, I was reading in the... Is it the end of... It may be in the end of this chapter. There's a discussion about how everything is related to Krishna. And that's why... In other words, we're only really interested in hearing about the material energy because it's Krishna's energy. How it relates to Krishna and how Krishna is creating everything and how everything is coming from him. So in the same way, the Manus and the dynasties of the Manus, when this is discussed, they're all devotees of Krishna. And actually, in the 8th and 9th cantos particularly, the 9th canto particularly, there's some chapters, there's only like one purport in the whole chapter because it's all this discussion of this one's children, this one's dynasty, and this and that. But yet, in between that, like when they start talking about, I forget which Manu it was and his descendants, or is the children of Swayambhava Manus his 10 sons and the lineages of each one of them. Well, one of them happened to be Maharaj Ambarish. And so then we have two or three chapters, long story Maharaj Ambarish. So in other words, the Bhagavatam is always bringing the story back to Krishna and Krishna's devotees. You know, so we always have an opportunity. The Bhagavatam is always putting everything in relationship to Krishna, how all of this relates to him. You know, which is why it's considered to be, you know, the highest Purana, the spotless Purana. You know, that it's the, you know, because everything, there's nothing in the Bhagavatam which is just material. Well, even this information, like throughout this, the story of the creation, it always is described in terms of Krishna and Vishnu and how he is the cause and how everything is coming from him and all his energies, right? So that's the idea. Okay. One more and then we should... Go ahead.
Uh-huh. So Krishna comes every 28th Divya Yuga? That's his like regular schedule?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my understanding that he plans it that way. That's his schedule.
And one more. I have listened to some of Sadaputta Prabhu's lectures about talking about this, but he's in more of a sense of scientifically proving it, you know, or finding evidence.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that, because there's a tendency to just, especially to look at all this knowledge and kind of think like, wow, this is crazy, it's so exact, you know, especially from outside perspective. So I'm wondering if you have anything to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't studied this deeply, but people like Sataputta Prabhu did and showed that much of the information in Bhagavatam really holds up under scrutiny. Of course, what do the scientists know, too? I mean, their knowledge is very limited. It's changing all the time. There's a lot of speculation. But it's interesting. Just if you think about that, the creation, that our Earth planet, according to the calculations we're hearing here, would exist for about 4,320,000,000 years, right, before the next annihilation at the end of a day of Brahma. That's actually not that far different than what the scientists say is, right? That, you know, that they say that, you know, that we've been around whatever a few billion years. I mean, it's, you know, it's not that we particularly care, that we, you know, that we put a lot of credibility in that, but yeah, there are a lot of there's a lot of information in the Vedas that can be substantiated, and Ajuta Karma has also written, you know, books and things that have really shown how a lot of this is factual. But it's extremely complicated. Because at their GBC meetings, we've had reports from the Planetarium Committee, the Temple of the Vedic Planetarium that's being built in Mayapur that Srila Prabhupada wanted. And Srila Prabhupada wanted, as one of the central features, he wanted this planetarium. He wanted to depict and show how all the universes were, how they existed, how everything was placed, and of course having Goloka Vrindavan at the top. Well, this has taken them years to study this to get it right, because they can't just, read a couple of verses out of the Bhagavatam and say, oh, let's just stick the planets up. You know what I mean? Because then some big scholar would come and say, no, you've got this wrong. According to some Purana or something or other, it says this. So they've been studying all of these literatures for years, trying to figure this. And these are our top minds. I mean, these are people like Rabindra Sarup and, some of our really top thinkers. They've been at this for I don't know how long, trying to get it all right and figure it all out. It's extremely complicated trying to understand the whole Vedic cosmology. But it's interesting that, like you were, some of the measurements and things that just we think don't sound like possible, Sariputta has shown how, if you understand them the right way, that they're very, very possible. In fact, they really sort of jive with what we know. I mean, it's not that Vedic knowledge is something completely out here that has nothing to do with anything else we know. No, it's complete. Vedic knowledge is complete and perfect. So it may be a different type of description. It may be explaining things in a different way, but it is a total, complete, and true description of the material world as well as the spiritual world. It's just that sometimes it's hard for us to understand exactly what's being said and how it's being said. Right. Let me just complete here. Because the other point that Prabhupada makes in the beginning of this purport is, why does Krishna create this material world? So we'll cover that real quickly, although it's probably, for us, the more important aspect. It's a very, very nice purport. It's very clear. I mean, all Prabhupadas are, but this one just seems to be such a clear explanation. If you go through these first, few lines here, he talks about, although this material world exists for 311 trillion years, it's considered temporary. So first of all, we understand this is a temporary manifestation that has a particular place. And the reason that this whole material world is created because of the desire of the living entity. If the living entity did not have the desire to enjoy and live independently of Krishna, there would be no need for the material world. So the material world is a place for those living entities who have rebelled against Krishna, who do not want to serve Krishna, who want to try to enjoy and control independently. Krishna says, okay, here's a place for you. You can come to this material world. You can give it a try. Give it your best shot. Try to be the controller, the enjoyer, and what you'll find is it doesn't work. We can't be God because the post is already taken. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we may aspire to be that, but it's just foolish illusion. And the material world teaches us, first by the school of hard knocks, by experience, that we can't enjoy this material world. It's all temporary. It all comes to an end. There's equal parts, at least equal, if not much greater parts, suffering for every little bit of happiness that we get. And so finally we begin to realize this isn't working for us very well. This is not our real home. This is not making us happy. This is because it is not our constitutional position. Our nature, our most inherent, basic nature of who we are, is that we are part and parcel of God, of Krishna, and we are His eternal servants. So when we are serving Krishna, we are in our natural position and we are happy. Anything else we try, we will not ultimately be happy. So as Prabhupada says here, Krishna not only gives us this place to try to falsely enjoy, but He also gives facility to reclaim the conditioned souls. As He says here, He sends the Vedas. In other words, He gives spiritual knowledge. He brings spiritual knowledge into this material world for us so that we can understand our real position, understand why the material world is here, understand the position of God and our relationship to God. So Krishna sends the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita. He sends the great sages and saints, the spiritual masters. He Himself incarnates and comes to teach spiritual knowledge. In so many ways, He is trying to get us to give up this material world,
give up our separate enjoying mentality and return to Him and go back to Godhead. Okay. That was the purpose of life in 2 minutes. All right. All right, Krishna. A couple questions still?
My question is still on the creation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so like in the day of Brahma, all the planets up to Brahma Loka is pretty much destroyed.
Yes.
But isn't there a actual partial destruction in the night of Brahma as well?
Well, that is the destruction. At the end of the day, destruction comes and everything just lays kind of dormant for the night of Brahma. Yeah, the night of Brahma is equal length as the day. So nothing happens during the night, basically. Everything is just destroyed. Then in the next day, Brahma recreates.
Okay. That's my question.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else?
So I was wondering about the lifespans. You were saying that the demigods, they all have this 100-year lifespan, and Lord Brahma has this 100-year lifespan. But they say that humans also have, you know, are designated 100-year lifespan.
Right.
But we see that some people live 50 years, some people live 70.
That's Kali Yuga. As the yugas progress, it's shortened. Kali Yuga lifespan is shortened.
Uh-huh.
That's one of the qualities. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam of Kali Yuga. It says that people are very short-lived.
Yeah.
So we don't even get the full 100 years usually.
I was wondering about the variety, though. Is that because of Kali Yuga and the demigods, they all basically live a prescribed lifespan? Some people do live 100 years here, and some people just don't.
Well, that's one's karma.
Yeah.
You know, one's individual, you know, I mean, long life is considered to be good karma.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, because of one's past activities, one may have different durations of life. But the demigods, they have much more level of enjoyment where they don't suffer so much disease, old age, disease.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. But in fact, it's described that the demigods often, they don't really experience old age and disease.
Uh-huh.
So they're just going happily along 100 years thinking everything's great, and then they leave their body. In one sense, it's almost a blessing for us that we have some indication.
Like a warning,
we have some warning.
Okay.
Yeah, old age and disease for us is just Krishna telling us, you got to get serious, you're going to have to leave your body.
Okay, thank you.
Jai, I'll go to Shri Prabhupada.